I'm going to law school, baby. It all starts here.
Caleb Parsons is a 6'9 swingman. He can shoot the three.
Oh, this is so contrived.
I mean, is America, isn't it?
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the episode for Friday, February 27th, 2009. It's a very special episode today. We only have four people here. Our staff has been decimated by illness. So I'm Adam Berry, your assistant sports editor and softball beat writer. And let's introduce who we have with us today.
This is Evan Drexler, the sports editor, football beat writer, and temporary baseball beat writer.
Mike McCall, football beat writer and columnist.
Basketball beat writer, and Mike DiFernando.
All right, and right before we get into the stuff we're going to talk about today, just want to say, send any feedback you have to sports@alligator.org, and we might read it on the show in a little reader mail segment at the beginning or end of the show, so you can hear yourself in front of our audience of dozens here on the Alligator Sports Podcast.
Thank you for being generous.
All of our families.
Dozens singular.
All right, on today's show, we're going to talk a little bit about the men's basketball team. We're going to say how we feel about their tournament chances, what we would do to improve the team, because I don't think any of us think the team is as good as it could be right now. We're going to talk a little bit about some breaking recruiting stories, which may have just been a message McCall got right there. We're going to talk about the baseball team, the softball team, and then we're going to wrap things up here. So let's get right into the men's basketball talk. Deeper, tell us about the Gators' loss at LSU Tuesday.
The Gators lose 81-75 on the road at number 18 LSU. Marcus Thornton scores 32 points. Garrett Temple has 21. Florida just can't close out a game they could have won on the road again. It hurt them. That was a game that against a ranked team late in the season. They really needed a win to really help their chances, and they couldn't get it done. So that's a loss that might come haunt them.
I mean, I thought they played really well, though. They at least, like, kind of stopped the slide that it had been with them. I mean, the wins over Alabama and Vanderbilt don't really count to me because they're supposed to win those games. They're coming down the end of the season. They better win those games. They don't get any credit for that. But they played really well on the road against the top team in the conference. I think it was more, even though they lost, I think it was more of a positive than a negative.
So what went wrong?
I mean, like you said, they can't close out games. I don't think they're just not good enough, especially the team like LSU who – is taller and more athletic. I mean, that's pretty much it.
The athleticism was really the problem here. Man for man, LSU just has bigger, stronger, faster plays, and Florida just couldn't keep up, especially defensively, and that was kind of their downfall.
All right, so how do we feel like that affects them going into their next few games? They got Tennessee at home Sunday, at Mississippi State on Wednesday, Kentucky at home next Saturday. Where are they at going into these last few games?
I think we all agree that they need to win two of the last three probably to get the 10 conference wins and make the tournament comfortably. They have Tennessee coming in here Saturday, a team they've lost six of the last seven games to. So they got a lot of work to do. I think Tennessee is going to be a lot to ask. They could maybe get a win. I think they have to beat Mississippi State and Kentucky.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's how it's going to go down. I don't see them beating Tennessee. Tennessee isn't a great shooting team. I mean, I think they're next to last in the conference in three-pointers, but they went off when Florida went up to Knoxville, and that was really the problem. So while Tennessee is still taller and still more athletic, I think Florida coming home with, even though they lost, I think it's a little bit of a confidence builder. They played as well as they did on the road at LSU. Mm-hmm. I think that helps them coming back against Tennessee, a team they've already seen. And, I mean, basically, if they can keep Tennessee from going off again like they did last time, which you can't really control, then I think they have a chance to win. But I still think they lose and they have to win one.
I think the major problem with Florida and Tennessee is that Florida just doesn't match up well with Tennessee. I mean, at one point in the last game, you had a 6'7 Scotty Hobson guarded by Irving Walker at 5'8". And, like, you can't really do much about that. They're just bigger and stronger at every position, kind of like LSU was. But Tennessee can really shoot the ball, too. So, like Mike said, when they go off, there's no stopping them.
Yeah, I mean, you saw what Florida did in that game is they came out and decided to concede the three and crash, collapse down low. Once Tennessee started lighting it up from outside, Calathes had two fouls. He had to sit. Then you had Walter Hodge and Irving Walker up top, the two short guards, going up against 6'7 guys. I mean, there was no way they were going to stop him.
So is this a winnable game for them?
I don't know that Tennessee's a winnable game just because they got so completely destroyed when we were up in Knoxville. I mean, they can win it, but I wouldn't bet on it. I think, however, that the Mississippi State and the Kentucky games are both very winnable. They only lost because of a freak shot against Kentucky earlier, and that was in Lexington. They get them here in Gainesville next Saturday. I just don't know how the team's fatigue isn't going to be. It's toward the end of the season, and they have three games to play in a six-day span for the Sunday-Tennessee game.
I think something important to point out is that Florida is undefeated at home this season. They do play well at home, so if they're going to beat Tennessee, this is their best chance to do it.
And do we say they need two wins to get into the tournament here at the end of the season?
I think 10 conference wins to make it comfortably, like you said. I mean, they could do well in the tournament, and then that could make a big difference if they have 9 wins. But, I mean, 10 wins is not going to 100% certify it, but it'll help a lot.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that even with 10 wins, it's not a guarantee. They just cannot flame out in the tournament in the first round. If they lose in the first round of the SEC tournament, then that really hurts them, especially if they're playing an inferior team if they happen to grab a good seed from the East.
All right, so let's move into a little bit more big picture stuff here. Brian Steele wrote a column a little bit earlier in the week. He said that he believes the Florida basketball team will make the tournament, but they don't deserve to. How do we feel about that?
I mean, I disagree because I don't think they're a great team. I'm not like excited about watching them play in March Madness, but I mean, they're in their conference. It doesn't happen to be a great conference, but they are making what they can out of what they have. And if they win 10 games in the conference, if they don't lose in the first round, absolutely they deserve to make the tournament. There are plenty of weak conferences out there with teams who aren't great, who make it because their conference isn't that strong. And there are going to be teams more deserving of Florida that don't make it, but that doesn't mean that Florida doesn't deserve the spot that they get.
And I think if Florida does make the tournament, they'd be a pretty decent tournament team where they could potentially win a game or two. Now, hold on, you guys are looking around. But guard plays big in the tournament. Florida's got arguably the best point guard in the country in Nick Kalathis, or at least one of them. And they can shoot on certain nights. So if they can go off and shoot, they can win games in the tournament. I mean, a good three-point night from everyone, they can win a game or two.
I mean, I think one of the big things you need going into the postseason, especially in the tournament, I mean, sure, you can have someone go off, you can shoot really well as a team, you can win games, but to be a more consistent winner, you need 3 scorers who are going to show up every night. Florida has 1.5 because they've got Kalathis, who's always going to do it, and they've got maybe Walker, maybe Tyus, maybe Parsons, somebody, but it's usually that they're not all hitting on the same night.
I was going to say, like, they need to have a big big shooting night to win in the tournament. So, like, Lightning has to strike 6 or 7 times in one game for them to make the tournament here.
It's all about the word if. We used the word if a couple weeks ago in one of these podcasts, and it was just everyone is if they do this, if they do that, if they do that. And just the probabilities of all these things adding up, I can't see happening for them to get to the Sweet 16 at this point if they make the tournament.
All right, so does anybody think they will deserve to make the tournament? I mean, how many games do they have to win here to deserve the tournament berth?
Well, I think if they get in the tournament, then inherently they deserve it. I mean, there's no, like, if you get in, you don't deserve it. I mean, if they get in, they deserve it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I second that. The people who make the brackets every year, they go through a ridiculous process, and they have members of the media go through and, like, do mock makeup the brackets every year. And even the media people say that it's a ridiculous thing. So they always do a pretty solid job of picking out the best 34 other teams to make the tournament that didn't win their conferences. So if they make it, they deserve it.
I mean, we'll be able to better answer this question if Florida's one of the last teams in and we can look at the last 4 teams out and say, like, okay, like,
who are we comparing
this
team
and see what happens. I mean, that's when we'll really know.
I was going to disagree with the fact that if they make it, they deserve to be in there because, I mean, you can do the right things and make it into the tournament, but, I mean, you're not necessarily going to be a good tournament team, and there's not necessarily a reason for you to be in there.
I mean, they're
going
to be better than half the teams that are in there anyway. They're going to be better than, like, a low-tier, you know, mid-major schools that get in.
I think as long as you're in the discussion, like, if you're in the zone of, like, one of the last 4 or 5 teams that didn't make it to the teams that did make it, you deserve it because you're in the discussion, and then it's kind of a decision process that could go either way.
It's part of the problem that we're trying to compare this team to past Florida teams, not so much the rest of the country, and saying that this team is maybe a little bit disappointing.
It's definitely hard to take a step back after what happened here a few years ago with the back-to-back national championships and look at this in the scope, not a national scope, like you said, but in the scope of the conference and where they fit, which is not near the top right now. And that's one of the things you have to keep in mind.
All right, so let's get a little more in-depth about this basketball team. None of us agree that this is really an exciting, amazing basketball team, right?
Right.
All right. So what would we do to improve this team? What realistically, I mean, you could say anything in the world, but what realistically would you do to improve this team?
I don't know if there's any way to really make it exciting, save for just not letting anyone touch the ball but Kalathis. I'd like to watch that. That would be fun to watch. Everyone else stays on defense. Kalathis goes 1-on-5. Maybe one guy so we can throw like a behind-the-back pass or something.
Alex Tyus.
But to make them more functional, like I said, you got to have 3 scorers. And if I'm Billy Donovan right now, I'm going wherever Walter Hodge lives, and I'm getting in his face, and I'm telling him, look, you're a senior. You need to step up here. You can't be passive. You can't pass up shots. You've got to go after it and be a scorer, because if not, then you've got to come out, and other guys have got to get in, because the thing they've got to deal with right now is you're looking at down low. They kind of need Dan Warner in there every once in a while to help out on defense. I think that helps, but you're sacrificing some offense there. I mean, KG's finally coming around a little bit more, and then you also need Ray Shipman in there on defense at guard. And neither Shipman and Warner are not going to give you a lot of offense. So I think that offense has to come from guys like Tyus, Parsons, Calathes and Hodge. And I think Hodge, especially because he's a senior, he was on those national championship teams. He should know what to do.
All right, well, I'm going to start by revamping the entire lineup. Calathes and Tyus stay. Everyone else is getting moved around.
Everyone.
First of all, I think that Walter Hodge, he's a senior. He played well against LSU. He had 16 points. But
and Georgia, 22 points.
All right, he had two great games this season. Outside of that, he's been largely non-existent on the offensive end of the floor.
They lost both.
Okay, good point. So I think the first thing is you need to put Irving Walker into the starting lineup. He's been the most productive scorer outside of the starters. He's kind of been a starter anyway.
Yeah, he's essentially been finishing
the game. So start by getting him there from the beginning. Second of all, Chandler Parsons, you're gone. Mm. You're on the bench. I think Kenny Cagey moves in and plays the four alongside Tyus. I think you move Dan Warner down to the three. He can pass there. He can take the open shot when it's there. But I think having Cagey and Tyus with a little more size will help him.
You would start Warner ahead of Parsons then.
That
is what you said.
I think Mike's right that he's better than Chandler defensively, although he shouldn't be, because Chandler is a much better athlete. He is a good passer, regardless of what people say. He's a good passer, and he can knock down a shot. So I know I've sung Chandler Parsons' praises in the past, but he just hasn't brought it as of late. I mean, what do you want to do with Chandler Parsons these days?
See, this personally, I would start him. I would throw out KG, Tyus, Parsons, Calathes, Walker. That would be my starting five. But I would play Ray Shipman quite a bit more than he gets right now. I mean, as a defensive stopper, I think he should be guarding the other team's best guard most of the game, you know, whenever he can get in there. I don't really know what else I would do with this team. Do you?
I mean, the obvious thing that should be done to this team is have them get rid of the one-year transfer rule and have Vernon Macklin standing at the center position. But I don't think they can do that. I think some people would get suspicious if Vernon Macklin appears in the middle of the season. Yeah, but I mean, other than that, this team is still living with three-point shots late in games, and if they can't hit those on any given night, then they're not going to win the game. There's really nothing that revamping the team and moving positions around is going to do for that as far as, you know, getting lucky and hitting all their shots on one night.
I don't agree with putting Warner at the three over Parsons for defensive reasons, because I don't think he's – I mean, I think where he's a valuable defender is more like down low. I wouldn't want him like roaming out to the perimeter on defense. It just doesn't seem great covering guys who are slashing to the basket all the time. Mm. I mean, and Parsons may not be a very consistent scorer, but when he has a good night, he has a great night. And I think that's something they can look for. I mean, you can't count on it, but, like, maybe you'll get it. I think that when you bench – like, if they were to bench Parsons right now, maybe that'd send a message – maybe he'd respond well. Maybe something different would happen. But he kind of has an attitude to me.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that would work out.
I agree with the Parsons having a little, not necessarily an attitude, but he's a very competitive guy. He might not take well to being benched.
I mean, I like that about him, but yeah. I don't think it would work if he was benched.
I think Warner's best attribute isn't necessarily as a defender, but as a pester. He's always getting in people's faces and trying to swap balls away, playing down low, knocking things out of bounds, moving passes out of the way. He's not necessarily going to go up and block shots or play great man on, you know, man defense, but he's going to bother some people when they're trying to drive. In the
he's
game.
Not a lockdown defender.
No, he's
so
not, he's not a lockdown
so
defender.
Hard-working.
So hard-working.
Hey, 4 for 4 against Vanderbilt.
Yeah, he went off.
Perfect shooting
and
night.
And back to the Ray Shipman boy. I think you're right about Shipman getting more time. He's played really well. It's like he exploded for 6 points against LSU. His best offensive night of the season.
He had one really nice drive.
He can get
to the basket. That's the one thing this team doesn't have, a guy who can kind of slash and get to the rim. And I think that's something he can do for them.
So he's underused on both ends of the court.
I mean, probably. I think he's a little tentative because he's a freshman on offense. But I think if he's given the green light, he can score.
Exactly. He's timid. And that's one of those things. That's another thing. Maybe Billy should get in his face while he's getting
He should go to his house?
Yeah. He should go after he goes to Hodge's house and tell him, like, look, we need you to be a scorer. We need you to produce on offense. And maybe that'll make a difference.
And that's something that Corey Brewer never lacked when he was here. He was slashing the basket any chance he got. But is there anything we think Eloy Vargas can do for this team? Is there just, I mean, he sits on the bench most of the time. Is there anything he can contribute by playing more minutes?
Keep on getting Nick's Gatorade. I mean, nothing against Eloy. Eloy's a good kid. I'm sure he's a hard worker in practice and stuff. But at this point, he's just not ready. He had the injury that kind of hampered his like preseason conditioning. He's just not in a place where he can really give them valuable minutes.
Would this team be any better with Adam Allen not hurt, or is he just adding another, you know?
I think Adam Allen is another big body, another guy that can shoot the three, so I think Adam Allen being healthy would have helped.
To be honest, I had totally forgotten he was on the team. When you just said Adam Allen, something clicked, and I was like, wow, that guy. Because last year, at the beginning of the season, he was excellent.
Yeah,
he was a great
he did have
shooter.
A good beginning of the year.
That's something they need is shooters.
And let's not forget about Alan Chaney. He's been hurt the last 2 weeks with an ankle injury. He's probably going to be back this weekend. He might not be, but they said it's a maybe at this point. He started practice again today, so Alan Chaney's a guy that can do some things. He can rebound. He can score a little bit around the basket. So that's something to think about, too.
Whose absence is hurting them more this season, Adam Allen or Jay Lucas?
I'm going to say Adam Allen because Jay Lucas, to me, took way too many, like, bad shots. Like, he would get in a position and he'd throw something up and it didn't work out. And I think that what Calathes and Walker have been able to do, bringing the ball up the floor, hasn't been terrible. It's not like they've been really lacking anything.
Although the one place where Jay Lucas was really good was at the end of the game, he could make a big shot to win a game. That's something this team does not have. So I think having Jay Lucas, they win some of these close games they've lost.
And he provided that second guy besides Calathes. Because right now, if it gets down to the end, you know the ball is going to Calathes. If it goes anywhere else, I'd be shocked. So, I mean, if you had a second option, that would make it.
Unless Walker takes it the floor, right?
While we're on it, I mean, some of you guys out there might have seen this on TV. Nick and Irving got in a little spat during the end of the LSU game. It happened after Irving took the ball up the court on one of UF's failed possessions late in the game, and should have been Nick. And Nick ran the wrong play in the wrong position. Irv took the ball up, and it didn't sit well that Irving had the ball in his hands. And they talked about it today. So everything's cool. Everything's fine, but I think you actually do need to look at who should be taking the ball late in the game. I know everyone's going to say Calathes, and then he's their go-to guy. He's their best player. But if they're behind by a couple points or it's close and there's a fouling situation, Nick's not been good at the line this year, and Irving's their best foul shooter. So I think in that situation, you want Irving to have the ball.
Well, we already saw what Walker did against Georgia with the ball, time winding down. He tried to look for the outlet pass, but Calathes wasn't necessarily opener in his sight line, and Walker threw up a bad shot and they lost the game. He didn't get fouled and didn't get to go to the line to use that advantage.
Well, before that last possession, he made two threes that got killed. They took them from being down to tying the game. So it's not like Irving Walker is not playing well down the stretch. That was one play.
I think late in the game, their best play is to have Walker bring it up. Someone set a pick for Calathes and have him roll to the outside. If he can get a good shot, great. If he can't, Walker can take it. And that way he's got the ball longer, so there's more chance that he'll get fouled instead of Calathes.
All right, some other stuff that they could do. I mean, not on the court in this year, obviously, but recruiting this year is sort of a big deal. I mean, he's bringing in Kenny Boynton. He could be that guy moving forward who could, slash and get inside and, make things happen offensively.
Yeah, I mean, I think recruiting, Billy's still doing a pretty good job. He's got the trophies. He's got the name. He's got the facility. That's all going to work out for him in recruiting. What I would like to see, what I would do, and I know money's tight right now, I know the economy isn't in great shape, and I know basketball enthusiasm isn't real high to do this, I don't like watching games in the O'Connell Center. I don't think that's a great ploy for recruits. I'm not saying get rid of the O'Connell Center. I'm saying do something to it. Put some seats in it with backs.
You think improving these facilities at the O'Connell Center is going to make them a better team on the floor?
No, we're talking about off the floor right now. We're talking about strengthening the program. And I think that that's the infrastructure of your program. I'd like maybe some luxury suites, something like that.
So that's going to get recruits, though?
I think it helps.
I don't know where you're going to put luxury suites first, but They just revamped the scoreboards. They spent $1 million on four new video boards. They didn't have those when I was a freshman here 3 years ago. So, I mean, they're not just sitting there and letting the O'Connell Center rust like you're making it sound. I mean, they're trying to put some people in the seats with things like that.
Just, I don't like the design of it. I mean, whether they have new video boards or not, I do like the video boards, but I just don't like the design of the arena. You don't really feel like you're anywhere special. You're just in an open area with some screens.
Well, the thing with that is it's a multi-purpose facility. They didn't build it for basketball. They built it for basketball and for gymnastics and for indoor track, and there's swimming in there. And there's more than one thing they have to accommodate. So any kind of revamping of the O'Connell Center has to take into account how this will affect the gymnastics team and the indoor track layout and everything like that.
I mean, where there's a will, there's a way. I just don't think
I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm just saying that it's harder than you're making it sound to just put up a luxury box here and there.
I'm going to say that there's not a whole lot they need to do off the court to make this team drastically better, even going forward next year. Because I think next year you have Vernon Mackley, who's going to play. He'll start at center alongside Tyus. Kenny Boynton comes in. If Nick stays, that's a great backcourt. Then you play either Dan Werner or Chandler Parsons. All of a sudden, that's a really good team, though.
That's what they have to do is get Calathes to stay. I mean, throw money at him. Do whatever you have to do. Keep it under the table. You've got to keep Calathes. If you lose Calathes, you're really in trouble. He talked about – Donovan talked about how everything kind of fell apart when Spates left. I mean, he had all these complimentary players. Everyone on that team is complimentary to Nick Calathes. You pull him out, I don't know what's going
to
happen.
I mean, it's hard to build a team for the future when, the focal point of that future just leaves, obviously.
Right, and you saw he played basketball in Greece this summer against Donovan's wishes. He's not necessarily – he's not to Donovan as Tebow is to Urban Meyer. So,
well, I mean, I think Nick's definitely gone after this season. I think he's given no indication that he's going to stay. I think he's going to be a high draft pick, first round. So I think he's gone.
Maybe you start tanking games right now. You're not going to win anything. You're not going to
win the lottery. This
you're
is
not
going to.
You're not going to win anything like meaningful this year anyway. Let's be honest.
What is tanking?
So,
games
I mean, I think
start losing.
Warriors
don't make
the
tournament. Don't let Calathe score points. Have this in a horrible ending.
Kill your draft stock.
Even if he's tanking games, there's nothing that like short of purposely like injuring him that's going to keep him here.
That's
I mean,
a good idea
go,
too.
Go Tanya Hardy, Nancy Kerrigan on Nick Calathe.
Maybe an ankle.
Macklin can take him out in practice. It's a perfect idea.
Hey Vernon, why don't you go? Play hard on Nick over
listen,
here.
Listen, it's Macklin Alter needs Calathes here Alter next game. Year. It will help his draft stock to have Calathes getting in the ball. You want Calathes on your team if you're Vernon Macklin. So do what you got to do. Hurt him.
It would put him in a more realistic scenario with Macklin. Not hurting him. I mean, that would be good for nobody probably, except for Florida maybe in the future. But, I mean, it would you know put him with a real team, you know, a real you know, like a real center with a real power forward.
I mean, I don't think they can count on Nick coming back. I think that's kind of leaning towards the side that he's going. But I think Vernon Macklin being here next year and playing is going to do more for them than even Nick could be staying. Because I think having a big guy down low and having someone from Alex Tyus to play with is going to help a ton.
Well, then it just goes back to the classic point guard or center who's more important to a team. You think, you're saying that you think Vernon Macklin is more important to this team by himself than Nick Calathes is?
No, but you're having Kenny Boynton come in who's you know all everything point guard in high school. So.
And but you think he's going to instantly come in and replace Calathes? You can't,
I mean,
you can't count on freshmen to come in and just
hasn't Kenny Boynton
unless they're a LeBron James. It's going to go to college
or Nick Calathes.
I mean, Kenny Boynton stays. He can't see himself staying in college for more than 2 years. So if he's that kind of like one and done guy, maybe he is good enough.
All right. Well, let's move on from basketball. Mike, we got a new recruiting story. Tell me about this.
Yeah, Florida picked up its fifth verbal commitment for the 2010 class. A long way away, not till next February. But they got Victor Hampton. He's a cornerback from Charlotte Independence High. That's the high school that Chris Leak went to. He's 5'10", 170 pounds, runs a 4.4. 40-yard dash, and this is really odd to me. I mean, we're going to get into, you know, how what everyone thinks about people committing this early, but Hampton said that he has not visited any colleges. He's had contact with head coach Urban Meyer, cornerbacks coach Vance Bedford, and running backs coach Kenny Carter. Hasn't visited any school, said he only plans to visit Florida. That's kind of weird to me. I'm not sure how I feel about that.
I mean, this is a joke, right? Like, kids committing to schools before they've even seen them or before they've seen anywhere else. I mean, you wouldn't go to college somewhere to be a student unless you've seen the school first.
You're completely right. This is nonsense. We saw with Nukeza Richardson and Greg Reed that commits for the next year don't mean anything. They could pull out at any time. The fact that this kid hasn't seen a single college campus clearly shows that he doesn't know what he's talking about yet, and there's nothing behind this except, hey, Florida sounds good and they're winning right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, you look at Greg Reed committed on junior day, which is during the summer, I think. Like more than a year before signing day, and Nukeza Richardson committed in May, also in the summer, and they lost both those guys. I mean, this kid Hampton now, every team that comes at him has an identified target of who to knock down. They know to come in and say, oh, look at Joe Hayden and Janoris Jenkins of Florida. You really think you're gonna play? I mean, look at everybody, Jeremy Brown behind him. I mean, they're going to get in his ear. They're going to be shooting at Florida the whole time.
I mean, recruiting is like the stupidest thing ever. Like, let's get into it. I mean, when a junior in high school like is committing to like a major college program this far in advance, what does that mean? Like
when 11 months from now, he could you know have gotten offers from other places, actually gone to see schools, and he could completely
has offers other places: North Carolina State, South Carolina, Clemson. I saw all those schools on there, and that's all near where he lives. So he's going to be getting pressure.
And he hasn't visited those.
No, he hasn't. I mean, he's only a junior. This summer is when he's going to start going to all the camps and whatnot. All
right, so this is meaningless thing because he's just holding his place because he might want to go to Florida at some point down the road, right?
I mean, he said that all he needed to see was a national championship and that he's going to play. And I think there's a chance Joe Hayden might leave after next season. That's not, like, for certain. There could be a spot. And Meyer has shown he has no problem playing freshman. I think that's to his credit.
Like, well,
if a freshman comes in and he's talented, he will play. And, I mean, Florida's a great place to be. If I were a high school football player right now, Florida's in my top five for sure, right out of the gate, whether I live near there, whether I've been there or not. So they're going to get him here. They're going to try and, like, really hammer it home, probably give him a briefcase full of cash. That's what I would do if he's worth it. But, I mean, I think you can't say recruiting is the stupidest thing ever because it's the lifeblood of college football. This is where your stars come from. They have to come from somewhere. They don't just grow, you know, out in the swamp somewhere. I mean, they come from high schools. This is how you get them. This is the game. This is how it works.
I don't think DeFerre meant recruiting is the stupidest thing. I think he meant juniors and younger talking about which big college programs they're going to go to 3 years, 2 years from now. That is really ridiculous. And it's the same in basketball, too. You get people scouting seventh graders.
This is almost as stupid as Kentucky having an eighth grade grader commit. So, like,
I don't think it's close to that. I mean, that kid is 4 years away. This kid is going to start his senior football season next year. I mean, things are about to get really kicked up for these kids. I mean, this summer is when your recruiting experience really starts. You start going to camps. You start talking to schools. So he just committed right before that starts. It's not.
So he'll have the next year and a half to be manipulated. So.
Right. He will, but it doesn't mean that like they shouldn't be allowed to do this or anything. I mean, no, certainly schools individually could say, we're not going to accept any commits this early, but then you risk losing a kid.
But they could lose him anyway. What about Keith Richardson? He like switches on signing day.
Your
right?
chances are better than they are the other way around.
Verbal,
I think
verbal commitments are non-binding until national signing day, and yeah, we run that line. But you're
establishing a real rapport with the kid right now, and he is your kid. He's not just somebody that you're fighting everyone else for. If he commits to you, I mean, I think there's some kind of like bond there.
I mean, you could say the eighth grade kid is your kid as well, right?
Right, and I mean, whether these kids are allowed to commit early or not, they're going to do stuff like this, whether it's behind closed doors or not, so there's no stopping it. I mean, once these kids get to 9th, 10th grade, people are in their ear telling them how good they are. People are telling them, oh, you're going to play D1, you're going to go to the NFL. They're already looking around.
Has Urban Meyer met this kid in person?
I'm not sure about that. I think he's talked to them. I'm not sure if he's met him or if he's just talked to him on the phone.
All right, so we'll keep that updated as we learn more about the story. But right now we're going to move on to some baseball talk here. Evan, you have been the de facto baseball beat writer since our two baseball beat writers are suffering the flu right now.
Yeah.
Tell me about the team this week.
Bobby Colovey and Kyle Maestri are two actual baseball beat writers. They've both been deathly ill, 102 degree fevers, calling me, waking me up at 8:30 in the morning saying, hey, hey man, got to go to media op today, got to cover the team for us. So I've done that. I was at the baseball game Wednesday night, and I was at interviews today. I mean, this baseball team looks pretty solid right now. Last year, they started off 5-0, just like they are right now, but they played a much worse Siena College team to start their season, and then the same Eastern Michigan team, and went 5-0. This year, they started with a three-game sweep of Louisville, which was considerably more impressive than Siena, especially considering Louisville starts the season off as the favorite to win the Big East Conference. Mm-hmm. And you know, they got their bats going. They're scoring a lot of runs, getting a lot of hits. They're getting freshmen experience both in the infield, the outfield, and in the pitching staff. And it was comforting for Coach Kevin O'Sullivan to see freshman pitchers Anthony DeSclafani and Nick Marunde both have solid 5-inning-plus efforts on Saturday and Sunday against Louisville. And then he got all the other freshmen in the bullpen experience on Tuesday and Wednesday night against Eastern Michigan. And you know, this team's looking pretty good. Last year, like I said, they were 5-0, and they went into Miami, and they lost 2 of 3, and that was kind of a big wake-up call for them, you know, to beat up on crappy teams like the football team will do with its first two games every year, and then it'll start the real game. So now this baseball team is starting the games that should pose more of a challenge.
On a purely talent and, you know, what you can see on the field level, though, are they living up to your expectations?
I mean, I think this team is probably better than last year's team. So if that means anything, then they could easily take this series against Miami. Miami isn't ranked right now in the Baseball America poll, which is one we use, whereas they're the number 24 team in the country. Although Miami, as always, has the tradition and has a lot of great players, including this great pitcher that's coming up on Friday night.
Yeah, beating Miami is like beating Texas. It doesn't really matter how good they are, but that's the that's one of the names in baseball. It's a program that you want to beat. And I think even if Miami isn't great, this series will show us whether the Louisville thing was a fluke, whether they just had three good games, or if they can sustain that. If they sweep Miami, I'm on board that they're pretty good. I mean, I still need to see more development from the pitchers as the season goes on. But, I mean, the game you've got to be at in this season is Friday night. I mean, it's the Aces going up against each other. Patrick Keating from Florida and Chris Hernandez from Miami, who went 11-0 last year as a freshman. That's the best record ever for a Miami freshman pitcher. He allowed 2 or less runs in 10 of his 17 starts last year. And last week against Rutgers, he gave up just 1 run in 6 innings. So, that's the game you want to see.
And they've been spending all week talking about Hernandez and how if they get behind against him, if they give up 2 runs early, I mean, the game's essentially over because he's just going to shut them down completely on offense.
I mean, this is a different Miami team than the one that we've watched in the past. Jamel Weeks, their second baseman, and first baseman Yonder Alonso, who were excellent players, are both gone. They've still got some good guys. Catcher Yasmani Grandal, right fielder Dave DiNatale, and shortstop Ryan Jackson are all pretty good. They can still... You know, they've still got some power in the lineup. They're still fun to watch.
Yeah, I was in Miami for that series last year. Started on leap year and went to March 2nd. And, I mean, the Hurricanes just impressed the hell out of me. I mean, their facility wasn't that great there, but they sure as heck played baseball very well. But one comforting thing for this baseball team also now, the UF baseball team, is that they're winning games by a lot, and they also won a close game on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And the close games are always the toughest ones to win. You know, they could beat the Eastern Michigans of the World 16-5 all they want, But to beat Louisville 3-2 in the bottom of the ninth inning with a walk-off single, that's the kind of win that really boosts the morale of the team.
And those were close wins with relatively inexperienced players, so even the young guys are stepping up early, right?
Yeah, definitely. They're getting a lot of guys in. You know, like I said, Tuesday and Wednesday night were really the nights that O'Sullivan got multiple freshmen. I think he used 15 position players on Wednesday night against Eastern Michigan, and also 6 pitchers. So the more people he's getting experience, the better off he is, especially for this series against Miami.
It looks very promising. And I know
Absolutely.
I said that if they sweep, that I'll be on board. And by that, I mean, like, I'll believe that their ceiling is a lot higher than what I did at the beginning of the season. But it's going to take a lot more time for this to pan out before we can see where this team's headed and how good they really are. But this is definitely a step in the right direction if they take this series.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you still can't count on freshmen for the duration of the season. Each one of them had a good opening weekend. Morande and Pantaleonis, or DiSclafani, excuse me, Pantaleonis. They both had good opening series against Louisville, but can they sustain it for multiple months? Like last year, Tommy Toledo was great for 2 months, and then he kind of tailed off. He was actually the only guy to get a win against Miami last year in the closing game of that series.
All right, and that'll be the test going forward, is if they can keep up this pace with which they've started the season. I think we're going to move on now, talk a little bit about the UF softball team. Last weekend, they went 4-1 in this tournament out in Palm Springs, California. They lost, dropped one to Washington, number 3 team in the country, a really elite pitcher on that team. They lost 1-0, couldn't get anything going at the plate, had 2 hits all game, both bunts from Kim Olazonia. But they bounced back from that Wednesday with a win against number 6 Michigan. Stacy Nelson shut out the team, which is a very good hitting team. They're averaging something like 4.5 runs on the season, 7 or so hits. Very good offensive team. They completely shut them out. They got some decent stuff going at the plate. They're going to have another tournament this weekend. 6 games in 3 days. I think we talked about 3 games in 6 days earlier with basketball. This is the flip side, 6 games in 3 days. Not a lot of great competition. They beat Texas Tech, who they'll play once this weekend, 11-0 earlier in the season. But, I mean, it's still a challenge. It's still going to provide a lot of different things they haven't seen. Francesca Anaya, the left fielder who suffered an ACL tear before the season, might not see as much time in the field. It'll be interesting to see how they fill the gaps there. And obviously, in the circle, they'll have 2 great pitchers going in there. Stephanie Brombacher, sophomore, still has not lost in her UF career. And Stacy Nelson, who, like I said earlier, shut out the number 6 team in the country. So let's talk a little bit about Brombacher and Nelson. We've had a couple of debates around here about who is better right now, Stephanie Brombacher, Stacy Nelson. Mike, what do you decide on the debate?
Okay, how many losses Nelson have? 2?
2, but she has given up 2 combined runs.
Yeah, they were both one.
How many,
one nothing
and how many runs has Brombacher given up?
Runs?
Yeah.
I believe 3, maybe
3.
2.
3? Okay, I mean, Nelson is still the more intimidating pitcher to me. I would rather face Brombacher than Nelson. I mean, both of them would smoke me a dozen times. But, I mean, it's not really Nelson's fault that she had those 2 losses.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to take – it's very impressive to me that Brombacher has not lost.
Ever.
Ever, yeah. That's incredible. So I think at some point in her career, she may be better than Nelson. I mean, she's still got a lot of time to develop. But right now, I'm going to stay with Nelson. Although, what you really want – I mean, what you want from a pitcher is not to allow a lot of runs. So in that sense, even though Nelson has more losses, I think she's still the better pitcher. But you've got to get wins. I mean, you've got to figure out a way. Whether that's – somehow inspiring your offense to play better? I don't know. I mean,
I was going to say, you can make the argument that Brombacher's facing, you know, maybe some other team's second pitcher. She's getting more run support on her side, so it's a little less pressure on her, whereas Stacy is always facing top-tier pitching, not getting a whole lot of run support in those big-time games like Washington and Baylor.
And Nelson's the name. Nelson's the one they're gunning for.
Absolutely.
Nelson is, we've said this before, that she's the Tebow of U.S. softball. I mean, she's where people come to Tebow and go for his knees and try and take him out of games. I mean, Nelson's the one that people get up to face. So she's the one they're gunning for.
And I will say that I agree that I think Brombacher, in her career, could have just as good as, maybe even a better career than Nelson here at, in terms of pitching and softball. But I think, I mean, like you said, Stacy Nelson is the name. She's hard to dethrone, and everybody's gunning for. And there is still, I can't say she's the leader because, I mean, even the team admits they don't really have a leader. They lead by committee there. But, you know, she's the face associated with this team.
Adam, you've really, in the past couple of weeks, really been drinking the Brombacher Kool-Aid. All you do is talk about Stephanie Brombacher and how she could be better than Stacy Nelson. You just make it sound like she's really fantastic
and
going to be
really
better
is.
Than Nelson. In
like I said, she hasn't
years.
Lost. She's given up like 3 runs. But, I mean, like I said, it's hard to dethrone Stacy Nelson. She's the name. And she still is getting it done. It's not like Stacy Nelson is a bad pitcher. And it's not like Brombacher is, you know,
The constant you have to look at. I mean, we talked about how Nelson's facing the ace. She's not getting as much run support, mm-hmm. and that's why the win-loss totals are different. But on their different days, they're facing the same lineups usually. If they're facing the same when they face the same team twice.
Yeah.
So you're getting a good comparison of Brombacher and Nelson there, and Nelson's allowed less
run. But, I mean, you can pitch in different ways when you have run support. I mean, you know that in baseball as well. Mm-hmm. So. All right, well, that about wraps it up for today's show. I think we're going to close it out there. Once again, send any feedback to sports@alligator.org or leave a comment on one of our blogs. And we'd like to wish Bobby, Kyle, and Phil, who couldn't be at today's show, to get well soon.
Take your time getting well, guys. I think the show's going on great without you.
And also, Red Wings 4,
nope,
Sharks
nope,
1
that about
last
wraps
night
up
for
today's
the
show.
Conference.
Evan is trying to once again sneak in and talk about his beloved Detroit Red Wings.
Beat the Sharks.
I think that about wraps it up. So thanks for listening, and we're out.